You want some sexy? You want to laugh? License to Talk.
License to Talk is brought to you by First in Buffalo. Fireman owned and operated, custom apparel, custom hats, 389 Abbott Road. Get your custom gear at First in Buffalo. Dog Ears Bookstore. Stop into the cafe and bookstore and enjoy a welcoming hometown atmosphere, all while supporting programs that spread creativity and literacy throughout South Buffalo and beyond. Don't get your coffee from Timmy when you can get it from Tommy. Charlie's Boatyard, 1111 Furman Boulevard. Come and enjoy a nice cold drink and a beautiful sunset.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
All right, Marky, episode 91. We're here with Jay Skursky. He is the Bills writer for the Bills beat writer for the Buffalo News. Jay, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, the NFL has gone bonkers, quite the offseason already. This is not your typical offseason, Jay.
No, it's, it's busy as always. I always marvel at the fact that the NFL plays games from September through, you know, the beginning of January if you miss the playoffs, and ideally if you make the playoffs a little bit longer, but they've found a way to basically be about a 10.5 month to an 11 month league in terms of free agency, the draft, even the schedule release now is a big thing. So leave it to the NFL to find ways to stay at the forefront of the sporting fan's mind, I guess, if you will. And, you know, even then you get into OTAs and training camp, and it feels like it never really stops.
Yeah.
Especially for a league that plays 17 regular season games,
but soon
that's
to
what
be
they're
18.
Good at.
Soon to be 18.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And they're going to lose one of the preseason games and, you know, two preseason and 18 regular season. And then I've already seen speculation as to when does that become no preseason and 20 regular season games. So, Yeah. You know, maybe in our lifetimes, we'll see that as well.
Yeah. You didn't have to write about anomalies this year, like things that are just like crazy happening. It was like, yeah, we lost games.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking. You know, like last year was like, you know, somebody being brought back to life on the field.
Easier this year, it seemed.
We can talk about the DeMar Hamlin situation and just, you know, what that was like to cover being there, you know, in Cincinnati and going through that. That's certainly a game that I will remember forever, certainly. But, yeah, the season, you're right. It was from a logistical standpoint and just a crazy games getting moved because of snow and all of these challenges. That, you know, this season wasn't that. It had its own on-field challenges, of course, and, you know, it ended well until they got into the postseason and couldn't find a way past the Chiefs. But certainly, I think, you know, it was a much more traditional, if you will, season than right. The year before, which was unlike any season I think I've ever seen and probably will ever again.
Well, you talk about the draft coming up. Were you at the Combine?
I was at the Combine, and I'll be heading to the owners' meetings in just a few days here down in Orlando. And, so kind of making all – I was at the Super Bowl as well, kind of make all the rounds of the offseason stops.
Yeah.
So you're talking about the Hamlin thing. Like, you were in Cincinnati at the time?
I was, yeah. I was covering that game. I tell this story frequently about covering that game, and – you know, sitting in the press box, you're quite far removed from the field. You're up above the, you know, whatever it is, the 300 level, if you will. And so for me, I watch the game not all the time, but I have binoculars that I use for a lot of the game. You know, you're either watching plays or you're watching the sideline, trying to see if a guy was maybe hurt, if he's coming back in. So binoculars come in handy, right? And so when Hamlin went down, no one really at the time, at least in the press box, knew what was going on, right? And, you know, unfortunately, covering injuries is a part of the NFL. They're pretty common, right? It was really apparent, though, really quickly, and the way that I knew that was based on the way that his teammates were reacting, more so than seeing him, because obviously he wasn't moving. But seeing how panicked his teammates were, you knew that something was wrong. And immediately when a guy goes down and isn't moving, you go to a, you know, potential neck injury. There have been a lot of scares like that. We've seen, you know, the Bills have had guys taken off in ambulances and the scares that come with that. But it became, again, apparent pretty quickly once they did show a replay and he was still on the field that wasn't what we were dealing with. It, you know, it didn't appear to be anything related to that. And I'll never forget the image. It's really like almost burned into my brain of watching, you know, through the binoculars from the press box to try to get any sense of what was going on. And no one really knew. And there were so many trainers and medical personnel around him that you really couldn't see anything. And for a very brief moment, the people that were around him sort of moved just for a few seconds, but it allowed me to see that sort of unmistakable image of them giving him CPR on the field. And as it was going on, I was trying to use Twitter as sort of my notes, really. So I was tweeting basically everything that I was seeing in real time, what was going on in the stadium, what the reaction was, what his teammates were doing, what, you know, they were doing, as far as I could tell. And I tweeted that they're giving DeMar Hamlin CPR on the field. I think I was the first person to tweet that. A normal tweet for me, well, you know, I have a fairly decent sized audience, not as big as some others, but big enough. And, you know, let's say it does, I don't even know, 50,000, 100,000 impressions, right? That tweet, the last time I had looked, had done over 15 million. And oh my gosh. It basically went around the world, literally around the world, in seconds. And I mean, while he was still on the field, I was receiving calls from CNN, from MSNBC, from, you know, national news outlets who wanted to talk to me. And mind you, the ambulance had not left the field yet. Yeah. And these people have found me to talk to me about this. And I think it became really apparent for me very, very fast that what we're dealing with is a story that transcends sports, transcends even the United States, right? This is a worldwide story that is getting worldwide attention as it's happening, and I'm here documenting it. And for a lot of people, you know, if they go to the Buffalo News, they're reading my words about it. And I think there was a lot going through my mind at that time, right? It was, number one, I need to make sure that I have all of this right, right? You know, people are going to be reading this, and I want it to be as accurate of a reflection of what I've just witnessed as possible. But yeah, that image of them doing CPR and seeing that through the binoculars and then putting that information out to the world and seeing how fast it got spread throughout the world is, you know, for me and my career, really one of the more, and I don't mean it to make it sound like it was a good thing, but it was very noteworthy. It was something that, you know, is really going to stick with me for a long time.
News is news. I mean, let's be honest. It was major news.
It was. It was probably the biggest story that I've covered, you know, on a football field. And you hate, you know, the circumstances that were involved with it. But, you know, then you spin it forward to the recovery that he made and just in the days and weeks that followed and these, you know, miraculous
the
steps that he
turn.
Was making. Yeah.
I mean, it just kept going and going.
It did. And so there was a lot of emotion involved. It was really a remarkable story to cover. And it really, you know, it still is, you know, to see the good that he has been able to do, you know, through his charity and all the money that was donated. It's one of those stories that, you know, when I look back 20 or 30 years from now and I'm not doing this, I'll think of,
good for you.
But like that's like the crazy thing is that, you know, most guys who just write for their team don't have to write stories like that or cover those things. You know, it was like a total sidetrack of the entire season.
Yeah, it became, you know, something entirely different that had nothing to do with football. And you know, Sean McDermott, I think, you know, handled that situation about as well as a head coach could handle it. And, you know, he was pretty apparent and pretty deliberate about. I remember it was, you know, maybe a day or two after the fact when he did a press conference back here in Buffalo at the stadium, and he was very adamant that there weren't going to be any questions that had anything to do with football, that it was all going to be about DeMar Hamlin. And again, that walking in, they did that press conference in Highmark Stadium in the press conference room, the post game room, and that was the busiest that I've ever seen that room. And again, people from, you know, several national outlets, and it just spoke to the worldwide impact of that story.
I hope you guys get a bigger media room in the new stadium.
Yeah,
you're gonna need it.
We're not as worried about the media room as we are about the press box. We want a nice view, and we want a little bit more space between the chairs. We're very simple, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they gotta just make sure that, you know, the coffee is, you know, warm throughout the game and things like that.
Well, we're going into the draft here. Bills are picking 28th. Or 28. Yeah. Who caught your eye that Bills fans might not know at the combine?
Who might not know? That's a tough one. I feel like so much of the focus for this team right now has been on wide receiver. I think that's probably still true, even though, you know, they have signed Curtis Samuel in free agency, which I thought was it's an intriguing move. But I don't know that that's done enough to move people off the idea that they should take a wide receiver in the first round. I don't know that it's done enough to move me off that idea. I think defensive line is the next biggest need, if you will, whether that's edge rusher or defensive tackle. I still think that they need to add to that position, both in terms of depth and then potentially, you know, even starters. They rotate a lot on the defensive line, so whether you call a guy a starter or a key backup, I don't know is that big of a distinction. But I think really when you're talking about the draft, you know, to me the interest is who's going to be the first round guy, you know, the second day kind of, and then you kind of get to the draft sickos, right, for the third day, right?
Oh,
those
yeah.
Fourth through seventh round, if you can plow through that, and they've got something like, I think, what is it? Well,
they just got another one.
Yeah, 9 of their 11 picks are on day 3.
Yeah.
They have one in the first round, one in the second round, none in the third. So they're going to be very busy on day 3. And, you know, it's interesting. I was just kind of thinking about that a little bit today and the success rate that they've had in those later round picks. They have not been great, really, in rounds 2 and 3. They're kind of hit and miss there, but they've done well on day 3 with some guys. You know, you think of Taron Johnson, who just got a contract extension, was a day 3 guy. Matt Milano was a day 3 guy. Christian Benford. So I think for where this franchise is in terms of the salary cap, the desire to sort of get a little bit younger on the roster, they have 11 picks right now. I think they're going to use, you know, quite a few of those. I don't know that they'll make all 11. I could see them moving up. We know that Brandon Bean is aggressive, and if there's a guy he likes, he's not afraid to do that. But I do think they want to get younger, and the best way to do that is obviously through the draft.
Yeah, because now we're getting to the point where this is what happens when you're good and you sign Von Miller to a lot of money. You have to get younger and cheaper. What does that say for the future of Steph Diggs?
Well, I mean, those two guys that you just mentioned there, Miller and Diggs, I think 2024 could very easily be their last season in Buffalo. Contractually, it wasn't going to make sense to move on from them this offseason, whether you wanted to or not. Miller, in terms of just, you know, his performance not being where it needed to be. Diggs, potentially, you know, however much you want to make of the drama that seems like it always kind of follows him around a little bit. I do think that they purposely didn't want to rework either of those contracts so that they gave themselves the flexibility that they could move on as soon as next offseason if they want to. So I think it's a big year for both of those players in the sense that, you know, they're going to be motivated to want to continue to cash these paychecks. And whether that's in Buffalo or somewhere else, I think they both have a lot to prove. Probably, certainly Miller, you know, more so at least from an on-field perspective than Diggs. Although when you look at the way that Stephon Diggs ended, you know, this past season and sort of the slump that he was in, the prolonged slump that he was in, I think he's got a lot to prove too. So, you know, what's their future? I mean, I think they'll be here for this upcoming season. The Bills have their fingers crossed that they can, you know, maintain a high level of performance. That, I don't know that Von Miller's ever going to be the in his prime Von Miller again. I don't even know if Stephon Diggs is going to be that. But if they can give them one more year of really good production, I think, you know, the Bills would take that, and then they'll see next year as to, you know, what their status is for 2025 and beyond.
Right. Just give those guys leader roles and bring in a bunch of young guys. You know, I think that's really what you need out of them is for them to go and be like locker room leaders, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I will say about Diggs, you know, there's always so much talk about, you know, how is he in the locker room, and is he a diva? Is he a cancer in the locker room? I don't get that sense. I really don't.
No,
I believe that his teammates respect him. I think that he is a hard worker. I don't have all the answers as to why his production declined the way that it did. But I do think it's going to be a focus here going into this next season with Joe Brady having a full offseason to really put in his offense, right, and to put his stamp on it. How is he going to use Stephon Diggs? How is he going to get Stephon Diggs the ball? How are they going to get back to the production that we saw at the beginning of last year as opposed to the end of the at the end of last year. I think that's a big question for this offense.
And he's totally trolling people with the, I mean, everybody gets wound up about him. And
it's Buffalo. We're going to react.
They're just playing into him, I think.
I mean, I think so too. I don't know what else it could be. I mean, yeah. If I'm looking at this from the outside, I'm asking, but the first thing I'm asking myself when it comes to Stephon Diggs is what could you possibly be looking for? You're paid like a top five wide receiver. You have a top three quarterback throwing you the ball. You've won a ton of games. You're the most targeted receiver in football since you came to the Bills.
Yeah.
That literally no other receiver gets thrown the football as much as Stephon Diggs. Devontae Adams is close. They're 1-2. So what exactly are you hoping to achieve not achieving in Buffalo?
Other than just trolling.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I think he likes it.
Yeah, but I mean, all right, so like just talk about like you write for a one-paper town though, too. Like, so when you say things like, do you have to write like all facts or is there any speculation or you can write? Or do you speculate more on Twitter?
No, so I mean, I think the days of like a reporter only being a reporter and a columnist only being a columnist are kind of gone. I have freedom to write a column if I want to. I don't do it often, but I can write opinion pieces. I do a weekly mailbag that runs every Sunday in the Buffalo News, and I can all of that basically is opinion. I mean, there's some answering of questions that are facts. But it's a lot of the questions that I get are, what do you think about this? So that's all kind of opinion based. Yeah. So I think those days are sort of gone where a reporter only is a reporter.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the one paper town?
Well, I mean, how many towns are not anymore?
Is that how it's looking?
Yeah. Unless you're talking, the biggest markets like New York. I mean, heck, I think Chicago's,
Chicago
might be
a one paper
town right now these days. LA is a one paper town. The industry has its struggles, which I'm sure if anyone has even a remote understanding of journalism and the issues that face, local journalism, newspaper journalism, but it's not just newspapers. I mean, it's radio stations, it's TV stations, the traditional mass media, if you will. It's a tough business. So I don't really put much stock. I mean, the Courier Bills Express went out of business in 1982. Yeah. I wasn't even born.
Yeah.
So
we've been this way a long time.
It's been this way a long time.
But now it's so many media sources are like, now you have to be more of a jack of all trades, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm doing podcasts. I'm talking to you guys. I'm doing radio interviews, either in town or from out of town teams. I've done, TV. You definitely, do videos for our website. And then on top of, your traditional actual job of writing for the newspaper. So yeah, you do have to, sort of develop those skills. And I think that comes with the sort of the changing way that, news is consumed. Sometimes people only want to watch a 1 minute video. And so you have to kind of try to give them the information that way. Those changes sort of come with the territory.
And you're the Bills beat writer. I mean, you're Larry Felser. That's gotta feel good. You come from the Bills beat writer. That's who else? Felser. Who was after Felser?
So Larry was actually a columnist.
But it seemed like he was the Bills guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he covered the Bills, right? Yeah. So Vic Carucci was. He was covering the Bills during the Super Bowl years. Vic left the Buffalo News, went to NFL.com, worked for the Browns, and then actually came back to the Buffalo News. And so he and I worked together. He is now since retired. He still does some work for Channel 2, so he's still around. And then Mark Gaughan followed Vic. Mark is still at the Buffalo News covering the Bills. Mark is, a mentor to me. Vic is as well. Those two guys, I tell this story pretty frequently. Vic and Mark had a run of close to 30 years, I would say, where those were the two guys who wrote the quote-unquote game story for the Bills. And Mark had a situation. The Bills, it was maybe 10 years ago now, somewhere in that range. You may remember it. They had a back-to-back road trip where they went to San Francisco and Arizona, and they got blown out against San Francisco, and they ended up staying out on the West Coast. They stayed in Arizona to practice for the week instead of flying all the way back. And Mark had a situation come up where he actually had to return to Buffalo. And so at that time, I was kind of the third guy on the beat. I wasn't traveling for road games, but I was doing home games and writing off of those. And so I got sent out to Arizona. And that was the first time in, as I said, I want to say about 30 years that someone other than Vic or Mark had written the game story for the Buffalo News on a Bills game. And so, again, you know, you talk about, like, moments in your career that you'll sort of remember. That one, for me, definitely stands out because, I mean, those two guys are legends. I think, yeah. You know, they could potentially be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame one day for their contributions to covering this game from a media perspective. So, you know, to say that I look up to those guys is certainly an understatement.
Yeah. Well, there's only, what, 32 of you guys. I mean, that's great. That must feel great.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, I wanted to talk to you about the NFL draft because we're in Dynasty League. And now it's only rookie-only drafts in a lot of these drafts now, and that's getting big. So a lot of people have their thoughts on the NFL draft, of course, more than usual, I would think now.
Yeah.
The first pick, definitely the quarterback from USC.
Yeah, Caleb Williams.
Now, let me ask you this. Name a good Bears quarterback.
Jim McMahon.
That's about all you could do, right?
Yeah. Jay Cutler for a while.
Yeah, you could say Cutler probably was statistically. Yeah. It's
who took him to the Super Bowl?
McMahon. Or Rex Grossman.
Rex Grossman, yeah. I wouldn't. Yeah. On a good list, but yeah. But Cutler and McMahon.
Doesn't it seem to you like, I know they're going to draft him, but isn't this the same group that just screwed up Justin Fields?
When did Ryan Poles take over? I'd have to go back and look at that exactly. It's a good point. It's rare that you see a front office get more, you know, one more crack at it, right? And actually it's funny, you know, Brandon Bean has said this almost exactly. He was actually asked at the combine about it was a question about Josh Allen, and as part of his answer, he basically said, well, you know, if he doesn't work out, I'm not going to be here anyway, so what do I care? And that's kind of true, right? So it's like, I'd have to find out exactly when Poles took over and whether he drafted Fields or not. I don't remember exactly the timing of it, but if true, you're right. You know, he's getting another crack at it, and that's pretty rare.
Yeah, it is. And then, you know, you're going to see the quarterbacks. Is it going to go quarterback 1 through 3, you think?
Yeah, New England for me is the interesting one at 3. I mean, certainly Washington, you know, obviously needs a quarterback. So, you know, is it Drake May? Is it Jaden Daniels? And, you know, if it's not, if it is one of those, as we all assume that it will be, does New England like the next guy, you know, the guy that's left? I don't see Chicago. I don't see Washington trading down. So that means that New England is going to be, you know, he's going to be there for you. It's just a question of, do you like him? And then I guess you got to throw in, you know, McCarthy from Michigan.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, because everything I read is the Drake May or Jaden Daniels won't be able to play in the weather. If that's the guy that's left.
Why is that even a thing?
It's crazy. That's what I mean. It's turned into bonkers.
Who thought LeSean McCoy was going to run all over him in the snow?
Yeah. But I wonder if they call Arizona and say, we're going to take Harrison. Because they obviously want Harrison. So does New England look to maybe get more picks?
Well, I mean, I think if you're New England and you don't like the quarterback, you trade down. I mean, you almost have to, right? I mean, unless you look at it and say Marvin Harrison's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer and we'd be crazy not to take him, and maybe that's so, but my question then becomes, you know, who's throwing him the ball? It's the chicken or the egg, right? Do you build your roster and then try to add the quarterback, or do you try to get a quarterback and then build around him? I think if you're picking in the top three, you got to take the quarterback, but you got to be committed to him. You got to like him. You got to love him. You know, I mean, you got to do more than like him. You got to love him to do it. You know, can you make the case that you shouldn't take him? I suppose you should. I suppose you could. But you know, what is Jacoby Brissett leading Marvin Harrison Jr. to?
Yeah,
I mean, a 7-10 season, an 8-9 season, right? I mean, I don't know. I just think when you're that high in the draft, you've got to try to hit on the quarterback.
I think we're in a better position as Bills fans than last season with our division. I think a lot of people were scared of the division with Miami losing a lot. So look for Miami maybe to get that. I don't know. Are they going to protect somebody or are they going to come after the quarterback?
With the Dolphins?
With the Dolphins because – do you got to protect Tua? I mean, they changed their whole offense over him.
Right.
And then, but you still have to play Josh Allen twice.
Yeah, it's a good question. It really doesn't seem like whoever they've put out there defensively has had much of an answer for Allen. Obviously they changed coordinators again. And that, you know, I think sometimes gets overlooked a little bit in terms of the significance of those types of moves. That's, you know, because you're not just changing one spot, the defensive coordinator. Oftentimes that means you're bringing in new position coaches. Sometimes it means you need to entirely, you know, flip over the scheme. Think back to when, you know, Rex Ryan took over from Jim Schwartz in his defense, right? Jim Schwartz ran a great defense. That defense was really, really good. It was a 4-3. Rex Ryan comes in and wants to run a 3-4, and he has to change out the personnel entirely. So coordinator changes, I think, sometimes are looked at, because they happen so frequently, as, oh, no big deal. But they can be, right? And so, yeah, I think if you're Miami, you know, if you're asking me, you know, are you trying to outscore teams? Or are you trying to, you know, stop them with defense? I'd be trying to outscore. I mean,
seems to be the trend now.
Yeah, and I mean, you're already loaded with weapons with Waddle and Tyreek and, you know, Mostert. And I really like that running scheme that McDaniel has. So they can make, you know, they can make yards that way too. I think you got to go all in and just say, all right, we're going to try to outscore teams. I mean, heck, you score 70 in a game, like, you know, you've got an offense that can put up points. And I don't know whoever you draft defensively that it's honestly going to make that much of a difference.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to this year in the draft, seeing how our team's going to draft to beat us, and are we going to draft to try to stop Kelce or try? We have to beat them. So are we adjusting our drafting? I think that's very interesting going into the draft this season.
I think the one thing that the draft is going to accomplish for the Bills is that they're going to get younger, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Does that mean that they're going to do that in the first round? I don't know. I said earlier that I still would be of the mindset that a receiver makes the most sense. But, you know, I've talked about this a little bit before with some people. You know, let's say there's 7 wide receivers that go in the first round. I think that's a pretty conservative estimate. You know, there's somewhere in that neighborhood that are going to go in the first round. Well, probably 3 or 4 of them are going to be gone well before the Bills have a chance to draft.
And they're probably from LSU.
Yes. And so now you're talking about, okay, maybe that leaves 3 who in the second half of the first round might be available. Well, that's assuming that the Bills like all 3. They won't. I mean, they certainly won't. Of those 7, the Bills are not going to like every one of those prospects for one reason or another.
Right. And they covered their ass a little with Matt Collins, Samuel.
Yeah.
And there's a lot. They're covering themselves a lot. And then you talk about, is there a need for special teams anymore because of the rule changes?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't prioritize that early in the draft. I think on day 3, certainly if there's a guy that, you know, can contribute that way, whether that's a linebacker or defensive back, then yeah, the Bills do draft with that in mind. There's no question.
Yeah.
They prioritize that.
You know who I want them to draft, Marquis? Kool-Aid McGinstry, the cornerback out of Alabama.
He just ran. He ran well today. Alabama Pro Day. Yeah.
I mean, he won't. He might not even get to us.
Yeah. He ran. He ran. Actually, Brandon Bean was at Alabama's Pro Day today, so he got a good look at him.
I can't wait.
So, have you been to the new stadiums in the NFL?
To the new stadiums? Yeah. I mean, I've been to. If it weren't for the COVID year, I would have had all of them. The COVID year cost me Denver, San Francisco, I think that's it. And then I've been to, I was just at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas for the Super Bowl. I haven't covered a Bills game in Allegiant Stadium, but I think those are the only 3 that I have left. So Denver, San Francisco.
You've been to SoFi?
Been to SoFi multiple times, Super Bowls, Bills games, yep.
So
yep.
What do you want from those stadiums in our stadium, and what are we getting?
Yeah, well, I think what we're getting in Buffalo is going to be much different than the experience in Los Angeles. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, that stadium in Los Angeles was built with more than just football in mind, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're housing 2 teams, of course, but you're also, it's Los Angeles. So,
but should we have done that too, though? You know, it's we should.
Should we? I mean, yeah. Who's got an extra billion laying in their couch cushions, right? I mean,
I know a guy.
Yeah,
he owns the squad.
Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, we can all tell him how to spend his money, yeah, but right. It's his decision, right, on how to spend it. I have not taken the new stadium tour yet. I'm looking forward to doing that. I've heard really good things about it and how cool it is. I've been to Tottenham in London just this past year for the game there, and I know that is very heavily influenced the design of this new stadium. I will tell you that Tottenham was awesome, and so if the new stadium is similar to that, I think people are going to really, really like it. Should it have had a roof, you know, to open up opportunities to have more events?
Right.
We can have that conversation, but, you know, honestly, guys, at this point, the ship has sailed.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Like, now, to me, I always say this, is you just got to make me like it. Like, get me there. Like, I, the tailgate, to me, like, it wasn't, like, I didn't need it. You know, if you put it downtown Buffalo, like, you'd have had a great time in downtown Buffalo. People go to Orchard Park and they're like, this is Buffalo. You're like, no, you're not even there.
Yeah.
You know, that's the over bad here. Part. You don't get, you know, when you're out there, you don't get to see all the cool buildings and all the other stuff, you know.
I hope to see mass transit to get people to the stadium one day. I think it'd be easier. That's a goal way down, I think, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think so too. I think, you know, the point of putting it in Orchard Park was that it was the easiest, most shovel-ready site. And anywhere that you talked about, whether it being downtown somewhere, was going to require a massive amount of infrastructure work that, you know, quite frankly, who was going to take it on? Was it the city, the state, the team? I think there were so many unanswered questions about how they were, you know, logistically, how they were going to do all of that, that it made the most sense to just say, we're going to just build it right across the street
totally.
In that big field.
Yeah. Well, we know you're a golfer. We know you're a hip fan. So now we'll have some fun.
Both. Yes.
Yeah. So have we been to Augusta yet?
I have not been to Augusta. That little man over there, my son, who's watching, participates in drive, chip, and putt and has been twice in the regional finals. You know, there's 10 kids at the regional final and – no, actually a little more. I think it's like 15, whatever. But you have to win it. And one year he finished second, the next year finished third. So we're getting close.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that he's my ticket to Augusta here pretty soon. or I win the draft lottery, I call it draft lottery. You win the ticket lottery from the Masters, which I apply for every year and haven't won. I just had lunch with a guy yesterday. He actually runs the International Junior Masters, the tournament out in East Aurora. That's a terrific event. And he's won it now. Either he or someone that he knows this year, it was his daughter, has now won it 3 years in a row. And I said, all right, you know what? You're buying lunch because I'm insanely jealous. And no, he's a great guy. And so I've talked to plenty of people who have done it, but I have not been to Augusta yet. So
I've
hoping it's soon.
I've been.
Okay.
But like when you walk in there, they're like, we'll buy that badge right off you right now.
Yeah.
And you go home and you're like, what do you mean? It's like, what? What would you pay for a ticket for the Masters? Like, what would be a number?
Oh, my gosh.
Right? Like, it's $75.
It's a lot.
There's a thing to it, though, that people don't know, is that, like, when you get a ticket to the Masters, you get to bring three people under the age of 18.
Yeah. Do you know that?
Because they want to grow the game.
Exactly,
so one badge. So, like, somebody will pay, like, a ton of money for these things.
We've
like,
seen 13 grand for the whole week.
Yeah,
for a badge, and if you think about it, that ain't that bad.
No, it's really not. I know how that sounds, but like if it was presented to me, I would consider it.
Yeah,
you know?
we're going Monday for the practice.
Yeah,
run.
We're actually
we got
going
lucky.
Again.
That's awesome.
This guy was giving out more make a wishes than John Cena.
Yeah,
he had a couple buddies bail out, and we're just like sitting over here like,
yeah, we'll go.
Right, well, I'm jealous of you two. Yeah. Right too.
Tunes in the golf cart or what?
What's that?
Tunes in the golf cart?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to have tunes in the
golf
cart, right?
Yeah, unless I'm – so my son over there, he's a pretty high-level junior player. And so, like, tournament golf, like, you know, very, very serious, all that nonsense. But, yeah, when we're out just having a good time, then we got music playing.
Yeah. Good YouTube hip station, Mojo Paw. Check that out.
I will.
He's out in British Columbia. He's got everything.
How many times have you seen him, Jim?
150.
The hill?
Yeah.
Wow.
There was nothing really going on in South Buffalo from 98 to 01.
That's an impressive amount. We have a mutual friend, obviously, Gary, and Gary and his brother, Mike, his younger brother. That's how I met Gary. Mike and I went to high school together. And so I grew up with those guys in high school, college, seeing the hip, New York, Boston, Toronto, a ton of times. I mean, I've seen them a lot of places. I'm in the dozens, but I'm not pushing 150.
Well, when you're a bartender at 18 and you got nothing to do.
Yeah. I didn't like them until I seen them live.
One of the more memorable shows, certainly the most memorable, just, you know, because of the, you know, the emotion involved, was seeing them on the last tour in Hamilton. We got tickets for that one.
I was there.
Yeah. But I remember the day that Drury and Briere left. Did you guys see them that day? You probably
did.
Yes. Art Park.
Yeah.
And walking in, and that was before smartphones. It was before, I mean, everybody, like, you had cell phones, but they weren't, like, connected to the internet that I can remember. But finding out, like, okay, I can't remember maybe it was Drury who left first, and then, okay, well, at least they're going to re-sign Briere. Nope, Briere's leaving too, and, like,
yeah,
not that it was, like, a bad memory of seeing the hip, but when I think of the day of Drury and Briere leaving, I think of going to see the hip later on that night, and the Sabres fans in attendance, at least, were not real pleased that night.
They also played the first show when the Jumbotron fell. And when he came out, he goes, "Heard you need a new screen."
That's funny. I don't know that I was at that one.
That's on that Mojo Pod.
I wonder what year that would have been.
I think it's would be 98.
Okay.
I think maybe 98. Maybe the Phantom Power Tour, I believe. Okay. Or Trouble. Yeah. Nope. It was the Trouble at the Hen House.
When we went and seen Pearl Jam in Hamilton, they played like a Gord Downie intro.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. That is cool.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, nobody can go out like that. I can't even watch the documentary because I'm sure I've heard you've met him before as well. There's just something about the aura when you've seen him. He was the coolest guy in the world.
Yeah.
Very nice backstage. As he got bigger, though, he ended up getting security. I was there in the beginning when he didn't have the big guy around him, you know?
Yeah.
In those days,
was going dancing.
He would go dancing. I went 9:30 Club. Everybody hears about you could just go by the bus, you know, and you'll be able to meet him.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't come out. Everyone's like, where is he? Well, they double booked the 9:30 Club, and they had this DJ from China, and he's in there dancing, they said. Everybody went and bought tickets to go in and dance with him. I stood out and went to the bar across the street.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I met him actually at Art Park a couple of times. And, again, I'll bring up Gary, our mutual friend, and he – You know Gary, right? Mm-hmm. And he's always found a way to maneuver his way into somewhere that he wanted to be. And by the end of it, he and Gord were sort of on a first name basis. So yeah, I was lucky enough to meet him multiple times. And their music is, you know, I obviously have a soft spot for it just because of the bond that, you know, it kind of helped formulate between me and, you know, my closest friends.
Yeah. They're our summer family. That's what they used to be.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that they always just sing about the lake.
Yeah. They're such a unique, it's such a unique kind of Buffalo thing because they never, you know how it is. They didn't really catch on in America. You know, maybe
they wrote songs about how, you know, it slow was places were across America.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And how, you know, maybe a couple of border towns here and there, they have a bit of a following, but I don't know that it's anywhere in the States like it is here. And, you know, I don't know about how you guys feel, but I just, you know, I grew up in Lewiston, so literally right across the river from Canada. So I've always felt like, you know, watching Hockey Night in Canada as a kid and listening to the hip, you always feel this sort of bond with Canada that, you know, my son plays up in his local golf tournaments are all in Canada. So we're there a lot in the summer. And so, you know, to know how much the hip meant to that nation and, you know, the connection that I feel with it, I think it all just ties into why I love them so much.
Yeah. And Degrassi, so you see why kids love Drake. And Kids in the Hall, so, like, you know, we'll get all the
weird
references.
Thing we got
It is. But it's cool, and I think it's a part of Buffalo that if you're from here and you get it, you know, guys, everybody kind of relates to that.
I think that now reading your column, I didn't know you were from, you know, the area, so probably knowing that you've had your heart smashed into pieces, you know, multiple times makes it really.
Yeah, I mean, my first, I grew up more of a Sabres fan than I was a Bills fan. I think more it was just because they were a little bit more accessible to go to games. I don't even really remember the first Bills game that I went to. I remember, you know, attending, you know, several as I was, you know, a little bit older, high school, college age. But I, you know, I'll always remember going to Sabres games. And but I do remember, you know, my first, you know, I probably for most people my close to my age and, you know, in my generation was the, you know, the wide right was my first real Bills memory. And then I think from there it was like, you know, you're kind of hooked on, okay, well, hopefully next year they do it, next year they do it, that kind of thing. But yeah, grew up a Bills and Sabres fan, and you know, Alex McGillney's my favorite player.
He should be
of
in
all
the
time.
He should be in the rafters.
He should be in the Hall of
he
Fame.
He should be in the Hall of Fame,
yeah,
of course.
I mean,
yeah.
Like, I could talk for days about how much I loved Alex McGillney. Like, that's what made me like hockey. And you know, and so I think there's a lot of people that like that are close to my age that, you know, probably share a lot of those similar memories.
Well, yeah, because I'm Stanley Cup all day. I could really, I mean, I of course, yeah, you want to win a Super Bowl. But like it wouldn't, I would switch the Stanley Cup for the Lombardi. I know you probably can't say that right now. But for me, I'm Stanley Cup all day.
No, I get it. I mean, it's just a shame that, you know, it feels like the Sabres are as far away from that as ever, you know.
Yeah, well, you talk about wide right. Is this new generation of the Mafia, is their new wide right 13 seconds?
Or is it now wide right?
Wide right times two, right? Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, it's 13 seconds until they prove otherwise. Yeah, you know, the thing I would say about that, though, is that, you know, it was a divisional round game, right?
Sure.
They still had a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
Right? They had to come home. Now, I know most people at that time would have thought that they would have been pretty decided favorites against the Bengals at home. Well, the Bengals have sort of handled them the last few years.
Yeah.
So maybe that game wouldn't have been as easy as people think, but the way that Josh Allen was playing, the way that that offense was rolling at that time, you know, you would have taken your chances at an AFC home, you know, AFC championship game at home. And yeah, and until they prove otherwise, 13 seconds is going to hang over the heads of this franchise, this coaching staff.
Do you write a lot about, I mean, I read you, but the window, you hear about the window. Yeah. The window's closing. Well, of course it is. You can't have a window open for 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, I go back to the mailbag if I get questions, you know, mm-hmm. Around that sort of, you know, touch on that a little bit. Yeah, I can write about it. But I maintain that as long as you have Josh Allen, the window's open. And I think, Brandon Bean has kind of said sort of similar. Allen's in the prime of his career. Now, I do think that it's going to look different, and I think it's going to look a lot different next year. And the year after that, it's going to look a lot different because they are going through where you have to sort of recycle, right, and kind of reload. You've got to retool your roster. Kansas City's done this, right? They traded Tyreek Hill, right? They've identified two or three guys, Mahomes, Kelce, Chris Jones, who are their franchise, like, kind of cornerstones. For the Bills, they identified Stephon Diggs to, you know, I would say a reasonable to maybe very reasonable amount of success. They identified Von Miller. That has not worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to hit reset on that, and you're going to probably take two or three more really good runs at this thing with Allen as your quarterback. You hope he's got another 10 years. I think that means you got to take three real good cracks at it.
Yeah. I think Josh Allen this year is going to set a record. I don't know what the amount of different receivers over a certain amount of yards or something. I think you're just going to see this guy play barnyard football. Seems like Joe Brady likes to throw in the flat. I think that's going to open up a lot of opportunity for a lot of these receivers. And I think that who's the receiver who wore the running back that wore the red sleeves? Not Taron Johnson.
Ty Johnson.
I think people overlook the games that he had down the stretch too.
Yeah, he was good for them at the end of last year. It seemed like every time he touched the ball, something kind of good happened, and so it made sense to bring him back. And yeah, they've got a lot of weapons. You know, there is only one football. How do they spread it out? I think I mentioned earlier, you know, I'll be very curious to see with Joe Brady having a full off season what his offense really looks like, because I don't think he really had much of an opportunity to do other than just call plays last year. It's not like you're putting in a new playbook in the middle, you know, 10 games into the year when he took over.
Yeah, and you're like, you want me, this guy to like me too. Like, you know, like, let him do some stuff.
It's going to be interesting. I hope Bills fans don't get nervous in the beginning of the season if things don't go right. I think it'll all work out. We should win the division.
They've said frequently that they want to be playing their best football at the end of the year. you know, the 13-second season, they were certainly doing that. Last season, you know, they run off six in a row to get into the playoffs, I think seven in a row with the playoff win. So you can make a pretty strong case that they were playing their best football at the end of last season too. So to your point, you know, if they start September or October even with a couple losses here and there, you know, again, they've got a tough schedule again coming up. It's not going to be – I don't think people should expect a 15-2 type of a season based on the schedule that they have.
Well, give me I won't ask for a prediction because we're way far away for that. Give me who are they going to pick in the first round? Give me that. I'm going to hold you to that.
All right, I'll say that they are going to pick Adonai Mitchell, the Texas wide receiver.
Who is going to be the last concert in the stadium, and who's going to be the first concert in the new stadium?
That's a good one, Mark.
Will Mick Jagger be alive?
So the last concert in Highmark, so we're looking at 2 or 3 years down the road. It's going to be like a country concert.
Yeah.
It's going to be like who's even big in country? Zach Bryan, is he?
I think he would.
I'm not a huge. Who's Luke Combs? Right, he's coming.
He's doing maybe, two shows. Like, how
yeah,
do you,
yeah, no, it's maybe, that two shows.
Maybe I mean, we have this, Canada.
Maybe it'll be this big country hoorah. I think the bill also
will Willie Nelson be alive?
Yeah. I think 100. I would like to see Leaf Sabres at the stadium before. I think it needs to happen. It'd be an amazing.
Winter Classic game.
We were cool. The original, and they based everything off of us. Now that the ice is good, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
And give me your most your favorite course and an underrated course in the area, golf course.
Okay, in the area, well, Diamond Hawk is that's where my son and I play the most. So I got to give a shout out to Diamond Hawk because they treat us so well. I'm going to give you – and I could. You guys shouldn't ask me about golf because we're here in so long. Growing up, my favorite course was Whirlpool in Canada. I don't know if we're allowed to use Canadian courses.
No, we're allowed.
Very fond memories of playing Whirlpool. I loved that course. I still love that course. Try to play it at least once a summer, if not more. Most recently, growing up in Lewiston, Hickory Stick has been an awesome addition.
Yeah.
That's a terrific course. So – my son's trying to whisper something. Say it louder. Wanted to shout out Ivy Ridge too. Yeah. And Ivy Ridge has we've been playing there since he could swing a club. And so I know you asked for one. I gave you four.
Oh, that's great.
Whirlpool, Diamond Hawk, Hickory Stick, Ivy Ridge.
If we could take
a week in the summer and play all four of those, it'd be a good week.
We started playing at a place called Whispering Woods in Erie.
That's like a weekend type trip, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, it's great. And then you don't bring any of the kids, and you go to Candies with K.
What do they sell there? We've been around. We're going to Charlotte. That's where we're going to stay for the Masters. We're playing any golf, any courses down there. You're a golf guy.
Oh man, I've played one in Charlotte. Actually, Bean got us set up at a course, and I think it's called Firethorn. I have the shirt back at home. I think it was the year that he took over as GM. The Bills were playing the Panthers in a preseason game. And so we texted him and said, where are we supposed to be playing when we go down to Charlotte? So if you were asking for North Carolina golf, I could give you a million because of Pinehurst. We go to Pinehurst every year. But, yeah, Charlotte, I think it's Firethorn, but I'll have to double check that.
Well,
we're going to stink anyway, so I'd rather pay less.
Will it always be football at the Buffalo News?
For me?
Yeah.
That's the beat that I want to be on. You know, when the PGA was here a couple years ago, I did some golf. I love local golf. Wish we covered a little bit more of it, but, you know, I know what pays the bills, so I get it. I'll do some golf here and there. Whenever the NCAA tournament is in town, that's usually like an all-hands-on-deck type thing because of how many games there are, and I like doing that too. So I think as I get older, and if I maybe move into like a columnist role or something like that, I could see myself doing some other sports, but primarily, you know, for me, it's always going to be the Bills.
Well, we like what you do. Check out Jay every day, basically, at the Buffalo News.
Pretty much.
Online or get it physically and do those puzzles.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Please subscribe.
Subscribe there. And Jay Skirsky, you are now licensed to talk. Thanks for stopping by, brother.
I appreciate you guys having me. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.